This is Pet Life Radio. Let's talk pets.
The Dr. Courtney Show is brought to you by Heroes for Healthy Pets. We're passionate about your pet's health.
Good day from California. Yes, we are live in the Dr. Courtney podcast. As you probably can guess, my name is Dr. Courtney. I'm a veterinarian, and I hosted Pet Talk and Nat Geo Wild, and I'm just an all-around pet lover. I want to send a big thank you for all of you who are regular listeners, and for those who are just tuning in for the very first time, welcome. This is a podcast where we get to laugh, love, and just learn a lot about pets. We've got a big one today. And normally I say that and I'm totally lying, but I'm serious about this. We've got a really big guest today and it's going to be a lot of fun and I'm looking forward to it. And if you're the type of person that wants to make your life easier, that wants to de-stress your life, then you're going to want to hear who we have on the program today. In two words or in a word, this guest is impressive. But let's talk about something that I've been trying to work towards for a while, and I haven't been entirely successful at it. It's one of my life's many goals, and this goal is efficiency. Yes, the ever elusive efficiency, that characteristic of being maximally productive while wasting the least amount of time. And let's be honest, how many of us want to be more efficient? If I told you I had a way to make your life more efficient, I mean, you'd be all ears, right? Well, if that's the case, then you're in for a real treat today. Today, we're going to talk about strategies or techniques that you can adopt in your own life to make your daily activities seem more efficient and potentially less stressful. Essentially, we're going to be talking about smarter living. That's the concept. And if there's a way that you can simplify your life and take the stress down a little, why not? Especially because every day it seems like we don't have enough time. Every day, our time commitments make life feel like we're trying to fit a week's worth of luggage into a carry-on. Not enough hours in the day, not enough days in the week. There's simply not enough room in our lives to fit everything in. Because of this, because we're so slammed all the time, any tips or tricks that give me ways to navigate my daily experiences better, I hold on to them like little gems, little life gems. Well, in today's common parlance, they're not actually called life gems. They're actually called life hacks. Life hacks are essentially what we kind of just described. There are little tricks that make life easier and maybe a little more fun. For instance, a common life hack that received a lot of attention is how to pick a line in a supermarket. The life hack is get behind a shopper who has a full cart. Now, that may seem counterintuitive, but data shows that every person is required to have a fixed amount of time to say hello, pay for their goods, say goodbye, and then get out of the lane. That takes about 41 seconds per person, and all the items, about 3 seconds per item. So for one person with 100 items, it takes about 6 minutes. While if you have four people who only have 20 items, it actually will take up to 7 or 8 minutes. So basically, getting in line with a bunch of people who have fewer things is not actually the best choice. And there's other life hacks, whether it's cutting up little bits of lemon rind into the garbage disposal to get rid of the smell, or using a toothbrush and toothpaste to clean the white parts on your sneakers, or even using baking soda and vinegar to unclog a drain. There's literally thousands of other commonly known life hacks. But today, we're going to talk about a special type of life hack. Today, it's all about pet hacks. Yep, pet hacks. What are pet hacks? Well, they're little tips and tricks that your pet might ask you for to make their life a little bit easier. No, I'm kidding. Of course, they're pet hacks are tools that can make your life with your pet easier. These go beyond just having a cool leash or a collar or a crate. These pet hacks actually may prevent danger or save your pet's life. At the very least, they will help make you get the most out of your new relationship with your pet, or if you've had pets for a while, it'll maximize that relationship. So what's a good way, for instance, to keep your pet calm during a car ride? Should you get insurance for your pet? And God forbid, if your pet ever gets sick, what's the best way to get that medication down the hatch? Just thinking about those answers to the questions gets me all charged up because there are so many smart people who have really figured this stuff out. And we're going to talk to one of those smart people today. But before we get into our exciting guest, I want to be sure to let everyone out there know how to get in contact with me. If you have any questions, thoughts or topic discussions, you can reach me at Dr. Courtney DVM on Twitter or Instagram. Questions with positivity and love will get answered with priority, but not exclusivity. So I'll answer pretty much anything. So right now, let's just pause for a few brief moments for a word from a true hero on behalf of pets everywhere. And then let's reconnect on the flip side, not only to introduce you to the amazing guest, but to talk about some ingenious pet hacks.
Sit. Stay. We'll be right back after a short pause. Well, four to be exact.
Hi, I'm Dr. Catherine Prim, the owner of Applebrook Animal Hospital. At Applebrook, we are your other family doctor. Your pets are important family members who deserve quality care in an environment free of fear, anxiety, and stress. We are so proud to be a Heroes for Healthy Pets certified practice. To learn more about us, please visit us at applebrookanimal.com or find us on Facebook.
Let's Talk Pets on PetLifeRadio.com.
We are back, and I'm super excited to speak with our guest today. I'm excited because we've got an incredible opportunity in front of us. We have the opportunity to speak with Dr. Natalie Marks. Dr. Natalie Marks graduated with honors from the University of Illinois, then graduated from veterinary school from the University of Illinois College of Veterinary Medicine, while getting a master's degree in between. She's co-owner of Blum Animal Hospital and very active in professional organizations as well. While being a board member on both the Chicago Veterinary Medical Association and the Illinois State Veterinary Medical Association, she also volunteers in other professional organizations as well. There's an award that they give to veterinarians who have contributed the most to organized veterinary medicine in their first decade of practice. That award is called the Dr. Irwin Small First Decade Award. Dr. Marks has received that prestigious award. And in 2012 and 2017, Dr. Marks was awarded Pet Plans and Novavax's Nationally Recognized Veterinarian of the Year. And then 3 years later, she was awarded America's Favorite Veterinarian. Favorite. She's highly sought after on a host of national networks like ABC, CBS, and she was also featured on the Today Show. She writes for magazines as well, including DVM Magazine, Dogster, and Vetted. And what's crazy is I'm just naming the things that she did last week. Wait till I get to the rest of the month. It's just insane. So podcast listeners, please join me in welcoming Dr. Natalie Marks to the show. Welcome, Dr. Marks.
Well, thank you. I think that was the nicest welcome I've ever received.
No, it's so kind of you. It's all well deserved. Now, help me out with the correct pronunciation of the name of your hospital. What's the name of your hospital?
Blum Animal Hospital.
Blum, yep. Animal Hospital. I just wanted to make sure it wasn't a hard U like Bloom Animal. It's Blum.
Yes, it's like plum with a B.
Oh, that's beautiful. I like how you put that. I'm naturally differential, so I want to call you Dr. Marks, but can I call you Dr. Natalie?
Whatever you'd like. Oh, go by both. Yeah.
All right. Well, listen, I'm excited to speak to you because I know when people hear the word hack, they're probably thinking, hack, isn't that a way that you kind of undermine somebody's computer? But what we're really talking about are just commonplace trials and tribulations that people have with their pets. I mean, and listen, I know people that never talk about them in public because they think everyone goes through this and I don't really need to talk about them publicly. And it might be a little embarrassing. Do you find that despite being so heavily involved in veterinary medicine and really hardcore science that you still get very basic questions about pet hacks?
Well, I do. And I respect a client who's interested in that because I'm also a mom to a wonderful dog named Samantha, and I'm a working parent. So as you mentioned at the start of your show here, efficiency is key. So many of us are working parents to humans and furry family members, and anywhere that we can make the most of our time and do the best for our family, of course we want that information.
That's incredible. How old is Samantha? What breed is she?
She's four. She's, we think, sort of a small terrier mix that we rescued from Paws Chicago, which is a large no-kill shelter here. And she was found sort of a running stray and pregnant. She had two puppies that were fostered, and we ended up taking her into our family, and she has been the love of our life. She is just absolutely amazing and has completely solidified in my mind the power of the human-animal bond.
I can imagine that, running and pregnant. That's never a good combination.
No, she's a teen mom.
Oh, my goodness. And when did you welcome her into your house, your
we
home?
We lost our pug not too long ago. She came to us in August.
Oh, that's such a heartwarming story. You know, listen, we jumped right off the deep end, and we didn't even get a chance to do one of my favorite segments, which is called Set the Scene. And we always do this.
Okay.
We always set the scene here. And this is a portion of the show where we get to, you get to paint a very vivid image for us of kind of where you grew up, what the environment was like, and what your early interactions with pets were at that point. For some people, they didn't have animal interactions or pet interactions until later in adult life. And then others, from a very early age, they were introduced to pets. How was it for you?
I grew up in a small town in Northwest Illinois called Sterling. And sort of a blue collar kind of working town with a lot of industry, but quite small, and always had a family dog or a fish. But actually, I started with a very good friend of mine working on his horse ranch. So my introduction to animals at a very young age was more from the large animal side, and fell in love with that lifestyle. And I think I'm probably one of the few veterinarians today that started from day one wanting to be a vet and never looked back. I think a lot of veterinarians in the recent classes have maybe either started in different career fields or maybe learned as they went that this was sort of the career path they wanted to go. But I am sort of that James Herriot veterinarian, that this is the only thing I've ever wanted to do. And I've followed my passion and continue to follow it every day.
Wow, you never look back. You know, we do have that, veterinarians in general do have that stereotype where they, people say, oh, what would you have wanted to do? And they say, oh, I never wanted to do anything else. But the truth is, sometimes I think people are forced into that answer. You are very truly, you never considered any other profession besides veterinary medicine.
I didn't. Nope. And looking back, that probably wasn't very smart because I didn't have a backup plan. But thankfully, everything has just a fantastic career, and every day is different, and there's always wonderful opportunities. And the best part about it is, I think a lot of people think veterinarians go into this field just because they love animals. But, you know, small animal practitioners like myself, we really have to go, we go into this field because we love people too. Because we deal with people, of course, even more so than the animals that we love. And it's great just taking care of the whole family.
I love that concept of making sure you realize that, and it sounds absolutely basic to say this, but that you are going to have to interact with people. I think that there are occasions where people have this appropriate affection towards the animal, but they also forget that through the pet, you're also going to have to talk to the pet parents. And sometimes that can be a little bit challenging for some people to realize that just as much time is spent with the pet as with the pet parents. We are very curious, though, why you pick Chicago, considering the brutal winters that you have. We all understand that you love veterinary medicine, but my goodness, Chicago? How did you select? How did you get there? And are you in a winter coat right now?
I was just a little bit ago. We were hoping spring would come sooner, but it hasn't. You know, I have family, a lot of family in the area. My husband is from this area, so we treasure our time with our extended family. And I really love my practice and love what we've, and the food is wonderful. The lake is wonderful in the summer. My kids have all their friends here. You know, it's a love-hate relationship with our winters, but we do loving living downtown.
Yeah, I think it's worth it just for the deep dish pizza. So I get it. I totally get it. Okay, so let's be clear about something everybody's thinking right now. All right, you know, you've these pets in Chicago. How are they able to survive? How do you help people navigate these brutal winters and some of these sweltering summers? Do you have any cool pet hacks to help keep pets warm during this sort of Arctic freeze and then cool during the sweltering summer?
Yeah, we have quite a few. So unfortunately, we spent a lot more time talking about winter health hazards and sort of safety. So all of our dogs, I tell my clients, if you're cold when you're outside, your dogs are probably colder. And there's quite a few dogs, even our Arctic breeds, that can still have frostbite from being outside in inappropriate times. So having, you know, any of our dogs that will tolerate it, having sweaters or jackets that they can put on before they go for walks, making sure that they have foot protection outside. One of my favorite hacks is something called Musher's Secret.
Oh, yeah. We all love Musher's Secret.
Yeah. So
great.
Which I don't know if you even use that much in California, but we go through it like crazy here in the wintertime. It's for your listeners that aren't familiar with it, it's the sort of a salve that was started, got to fame by being used on the sled dogs in the Iditarod so that they can run through the snow and not end up with injuries to their pads. And it's applied to the pads to protect not only from the salt, but also from the temperature of cold pavement. We actually also now use it a lot in our dogs that frequent the dog parks in the summertime, who tend to get a lot of pad burns from being on cement. So it's a wonderful protective barrier that's very safe and most dogs tolerate. So that's probably my top winter hack around here. And the other thing is I always encourage owners to make sure that, especially the condo buildings and the communal living areas around Chicago or in larger cities, that you talk to your maintenance companies or people who take care of your grounds and make sure that they're using safe salts. Because unfortunately, many of the salt products that are out there are not safe for pets. And we always have issues with dogs that are licking their feet after being outside and getting either GI upset or sometimes even toxicities from too much salt ingestion. So that's important to be doing as well.
That's an excellent point. I'll never forget the sound of the salt beneath the boots. I was born and raised in Connecticut. So getting that feeling, remembering all of that salt and the sand and the dirt used so that you're not slipping around is absolutely vital to keep in mind that pets are coming in contact with this every day and it could cause major issues.
Yes, absolutely. But switching to the summer, the smushed-faced dog breed population of Chicago is growing exponentially. So those are our English Bulldogs, our Bostons, our Pugs, and any of the combinations of those breeds.
You can't forget Frenchies. I mean, they're too cute to forget. You can't forget them.
They are on that list. So they have a horrible time in the summer humid weather, especially July and August that we have here. So cooling is very important, but I think it's also incredibly important for owners to realize that if your dog is starting to overheat, there's a very important way to do the cooling safely. So my second pet hack for summertime would be to always have rubbing alcohol on hand, because we will take alcohol in a cotton swab and rub down the pads of dogs' feet. And home strategy ways that you can cool a dog safely. The last thing we ever want to encourage anyone to do is if they're at a dog park with one of these breeds in particular, and those dogs are starting to overheat. So they're panting and their tongue is swelling and they're unable to cool and starting to look very unsteady, is to throw them in an ice bath or a very cold water bath, because that can actually do more damage than good. So having rubbing alcohol and wiping down the pads and also the inner ears of these dogs can really help cool them, and having fans and always traveling with a collapsible water bowl, not only for having water availability at all times, but also because, especially here in Chicago, our water sources tend to be frequented by rats and other rodents. And if there's a communal dog park water bowl, the last thing I want to encourage is someone to have their dog drinking out of a place where a rodent may have urinated. And we have leptospirosis and giardia and other waterborne diseases here that are also contagious to people. So traveling with a bottle of water and a collapsible water bowl at all times in the summer is very important.
That is absolutely ingenious. You know, I think about people on these hikes in California, and a lot of these dogs just have poor ability to thermoregulate, and they just can't control their own body temperatures. And the fact that you highlight most dogs cool through evaporative cooling, through evaporation, rather than convection or conduction or radiation, that's the key. And so if you can encourage that evaporative cooling through the use of rubbing alcohol, I absolutely love that. I was thinking to myself too, you know, one of the highlights of when I was growing up in Connecticut, because you referenced that the winter, my mind immediately transitioned to when I received my very first dog. It was on my birthday and it was such a surprise, and I was exhilarated. I mean, there's nothing better for a kid that, you know, who loves pets to have his first puppy, holding his first puppy. I wouldn't let it go, but I wasn't sure if you, in your mind, when you see that heartwarming image of a brand new pet owner, are there five things that you tell every new pet owner that they definitely need?
Yeah, there are. The first thing I would definitely encourage is early training, because the number one reason that we see dogs and cats relinquished to shelters today is behavior. And if we can encourage and instill early training, not only to teach your, in these cases, dogs or puppies, how to understand what you're commanding them to do and giving them outlets when they are bored or feeling destructive, things that you can command them into to get them to work and keep their brain occupied, you'll have a much more successful life with that pet. The other thing, though, is that it's so important early on for that bonding experience in classes, not only for your dog to bond to other dogs in the neighborhood, but more importantly, to bond to you. And going through a training class is an excellent and positive way to learn strategies to have that dog live safely and happily in your house, take away that destruction and anxiety, but also to solidify that bond that is so important in that 9 to 12 week age of primary socialization. So that would be one of the top. I think the second would be, at least in the last 10 to 15 years, I've strongly encouraged owners to look into pet insurance. It's happening in our pets today, a lot more disease that we're identifying, but also able to treat. Pets are living longer, but the cost of veterinary medicine, just like the cost of everything, are going up and rising. And for us to be able to offer to clients the best in care, but also to not have these emergency surprises that can be incredibly difficult for pet owners that aren't prepared. You know, a puppy that chews an electrical cord in the holidays, a puppy that eats a foreign object, you know, God forbid, a hit by car. These emergencies that no one really thinks are going to happen, but they do, and they cost a lot of money. And we want to make sure that finances is not a deciding factor when a pet owner wants to do for the best for their pet. So looking into pet insurance very early on, before there are pre-existing conditions, and finding the one that's best for you, I really encourage today. I always talk about now fear-free strategies. So these are ways to reduce fear, anxiety, and stress in your pet at an early age, which also allows us to help decrease the amount of separation anxiety in the house and allow pet owners to live a lifestyle. And this allows not only that human-animal bond to strengthen, but it allows owners to feel good about coming to veterinary practices and having their pet get the best medicine. Because when a pet is anxious and stressed, it can be very difficult to do a thorough physical exam. And a lot of times I hear from clients a lot, you know, it's so stressful for me to even come to the veterinarian. I hate traveling in the car. My pet throws up. I can't get my cat in the carrier. So talking about these strategies early, I think, is very, very important.
I love that by de-stressing the pet, you actually de-stress the pet parent, right? Because
absolutely.
I get nervous going to the doctor myself. But when if you have to bring your pet in and they are vomiting and they're stressed out, I can only imagine what that does for the pet parent. So it actually, your third tip, which is a fear-free strategy, actually, again, underscores just how strong that human-animal bond is, because by doing that one thing for the pet helps the pet parent.
That's right. The fourth would be, and this is sort of a minor one, but I think it's quite important, especially with dogs, is peanut butter. Peanut butter without xylitol. So we don't want the ones that have the sugar substitute that can be toxic, but your standard peanut butter. And I'll tell you why. There are a few dogs out there that certainly are exceptions to the rule, but most of our canine patients love peanut butter. And peanut butter is one of those foods that sort of is like Windex in my big fat Greek wedding, right? It has multiple uses for us in our home. Okay. Peanut butter is great for administering medications in. Peanut butter is great for smearing around the bathtub when you're trying to get a dog to be distracted, giving a bath or trimming nails. Peanut butter is a great high reward that you can freeze in a Dixie cup or a Kong to help with behavior and separation anxiety training. Peanut butter is great to use in different areas of your house in little tubs that dogs can seek out and use as sort of a scavenger hunt game for brain stimulation, especially in our dogs that are high energy or hurting and need things to do during the day. Peanut butter has so many uses, but most importantly, like I said, kind of tying into the training and anxiety relief, peanut butter should be used as a high reward treat. So something that when a dog sees that coming out in whatever form you're using, they get a positive endorphin release. They think whatever is tied to that food is something they will enjoy and is not painful. So it really allows you to appropriately and start touching ears and mouth and feet on your dog early and getting them used to seeing that and coming to you and standing still or being held or restrained comfortably without you getting a nail trimmer out and that dog's running under the bed and it's a stressful situation. So peanut butter is a huge help and very easy, just like the rubbing alcohol, to keep on hand at home. So that would be my fourth. I think my fifth, which is a traditional but very, very important and stands the test of time, would be vaccination. Because we know vaccination in human and veterinary medicine has been incredibly important in the eradication of disease and also the prevention of disease. But for many of our diseases, I am not just protecting your pet, I'm protecting you. I'm protecting the pet owner and the pet owner's family through vaccinating your dog. And that includes rabies, that includes leptospirosis, that includes also now with our advent of the human flu episodes that are and outbreaks that are going around the country, and our canine flu. Influenza is a huge problem today across both species, and vaccination is still a mainstay of prevention. We know vaccines are not 100%, and I don't know anyone that would claim that, but we do know that vaccination lessens the severity of disease and the length of time that you deal with disease. So that is one of the most basic but most important strategies that I educate all clients on for both dogs and cats so that we can keep your pet and your family healthy.
It's really incredible. These all five of these not only help the pet, but they have the common thread of strengthening that bond, strengthening that human-animal bond. When we look at early training, it's one of the keys to keeping pets safe. A lot of people ask me that. How do I keep my pet safe? How do I prevent them from having an emergency situation? And having them well-trained or tuned into you when they encounter a danger could be life-saving. The pet insurance, you never, like you were saying, you never want that finances to be, to put distance between you and that pet. And then, of course, the fear-free strategies we just mentioned, how they actually help mitigate stress in the pet parent, and peanut butter, who doesn't love that? And of course, vaccination, you know, that's really been thrust into popular culture recently, particularly out in California, just in regards to people really wanting to know the utility, the efficacy of vaccination. And I couldn't be more, it can't be emphasized enough just how important vaccination is to help keep our pets safe. I think these five are just fantastic. I was thinking too, when you mentioned peanut butter, so many people ask every day, well, all right, because we are in the business of providing healthcare services, a lot of times that requires medications. And that's a right. lot of times pet parents will ask, well, how exactly do I get these medications down? Now, what's interesting is I find that pet parents are usually so smart that the first few days, it's a little bit challenging, but then they kind of figure out what works best for their pet. Have you heard of any interesting or ingenious ways of helping to medicate pets?
First of all, finding a place in your home that is a positive place for your dog or cat is very important. So if you know if your dog is happy on its favorite chair or it likes to be outside, maybe that's the place that you want to be medicating, not forcing them in a situation where they get in routine. And I think that's another important strategy, is that you may want to sort of shake up your routine a little bit and not always medicate at the exact same time or the exact place. Most medications have a leeway of about an hour. So you could shake it up, time in the kitchen, one time in your bedroom, one time outside on a walk, one time in a car, just so that dogs do understand routine and they are quite smart. Cats, I would argue, maybe even smarter. And they will start to anticipate what's coming, or if you're using the exact same avenue for medicating, like using peanut butter every single day, you can throw some variability into that. Cream cheese is wonderful. Hummus works for a lot of dogs. We've used frozen Cool Whips sometimes, putting a pill inside some chicken broth and dissolving it and putting it in a little tea, or even freezing it in a little ice cube, has worked for some of our patients. Marshmallow fluff works great for cats. Tuna juice is also great for cats, and taking a pill with, if you can't medicate it full as a capsule or a tablet, taking a very small amount of tuna juice and taking that pill and smashing it with the back of a spoon and either giving it in a syringe or having that pet lick it up. That's something I would do sort of as a last resort, though, as far as the smashing, because you don't want to waste too many if your cat decides not to take that. But there's a lot of different ways you can sort of play around. If your pet doesn't have a lot of food allergies or intolerances, I like using the insides, taking a pill and putting in the inside of a turkey hot dog. That tends to work really well. Squeeze cheese works great. You can sort of kind of look at your dog or cat's taste preferences and work around it too. But I think more importantly, it's changing up the routine, changing up the placement, and starting early with those high reward treats so that your dog or cat realizes, hey, when mom or dad gets out the squeeze cheese, I get something good and I don't have any pain and mom and dad are loving me. And if they start to associate those foods with positive things, it's going to make everything easier.
I love that association with positivity and high reward. There's definitely some regional influences too. You know, you mentioned hummus out here, definitely in California, we're going to use a lot of hummus and some avocado toast with arugula. You know what I mean?
Sounds
that
great.
That helps everything go down a little bit easier. But yeah. These are fantastic. And I really want to talk about a few more pet hacks, particularly one that's very close to me because it does affect millions of pet parents every year, sadly. But we're going to take a brief break. Will you join us on the flip side to talk about some more pet hacks?
Oh, sounds wonderful.
Excellent. Thanks so much. Let's pause for a brief break.
We'll be right back right after these messages. Stay tuned.
It's not just a sneeze. It could be the pathway to disease. Your dog is at risk for contracting dog flu. That's why it's important to vaccinate your dog for dog flu. Get your dog vaccinated today. Visit dogflu.com for more information.
Begging to hear more of your favorite show? Full episodes of all our shows are available on demand. Go to PetLifeRadio.com to fetch our entire lineup of Possum Pet Podcasts. Also, dig us up in iHeartRadio Talk and iTunes. Let's talk pets. Live and on demand only from Pet Life Radio.
And we're back. I'm just super excited about this conversation because we've had an opportunity to talk about some really brilliant pet hacks. And these pet hacks are just opportunities and tricks and tips on how to make your life with your pet a little bit easier and how to strengthen that bond. We've had an opportunity to talk about what to do if your pet's overheating or how to survive a really tough summer or a really cold winter. We've gotten a chance to talk about what are the five keys or really, really important things and concepts to think about when you adopt a new puppy or a new pet into your home. And we've even had an opportunity to talk about all of the interesting and crafty ways on how to medicate your pet. And right now we get a chance to talk about something that tragically affects millions of pet owners. And the number actually is 10 million. 10 million dogs and cats are lost or stolen in the U.S. every year. That means one in three pets will become lost at some point in their life. And listen, the first rule of having a pet is not to lose it, right? And so in 2018, we're kind of beyond the days when the best lost and found resource was a handwritten sign on a telephone pole. So if you have a dog or cat that roams around the neighborhood, there are different tips and tricks that you may help you find that lost pet. And so, Dr. Marks, are there things that you can advise pet parents on, number one, to avoid a situation where their pet's ever lost? But then number two, if they are lost, are there any suggestions you have in helping to reunite them with their owners?
Yes, absolutely. And as you mentioned, it's one of the most devastating things that we hear when we have a client or a local community member who's lost their pet. And I will say the advent of social media here has been a godsend in many cases because we are able to share that information and reach so many people very quickly. But we hate that it has to get to that point. So a couple important things to help with dog and cat safety and also to sort of try to avoid even getting to that stage. One is absolutely microchipping. And there are many microchips available out there, some that are, you know, as you mentioned, sort of local or regional, some that are internationally. There's Samantha.
I think she agrees with the microchip.
She's very much on board here.
Yes.
But microchipping, there's a lot more coming with microchipping. Unfortunately, right now, most of them do not have a GPS tracking capability. So if your dog or cat, this microchip has been implanted between their shoulder blades, and hopefully your dog or cat is found by someone who can bring them to a person with a scanner, that information will be read and the owner will hopefully be contacted. That's number one, barring that that dog or cat is found by someone who can have a scanner and can read that. Number two, that the information is current. And that's one of the biggest problems we see is that people get microchips in their dogs or cats and they either don't register them or update it when they move. So that's very important for pet parents to remember that it has to be current and you have to register. You can't just have your vet implant the microchip or shelter or rescue and forget about it. It needs to be registered.
I'm so sorry to interrupt you, but that is, I couldn't agree with you more in this idea that if you have a microchip underneath your dog's skin, it ultimately, without it being registered with your most updated information, it's literally a piece of jewelry underneath the skin. It's not doing anything that you want it to do. So I just second and certainly ditto what you were saying in regards to having it registered.
Yes, thank you. The second important piece of information that I guide my clients on is to make sure, especially with dogs, that you have correctly fitting collars and or harnesses. We see so many clients, and I think it's across the country, you know, there's such a market and really huge industry in dog and cat fashion. And there's such a choice in anywhere online or in boutiques on different harnesses and sweaters and shirts and jewelry and all kinds of things that your dog or cat can wear. The most important thing is the functionality. We don't want these loose harnesses where dogs can get startled, especially in urban environments where they're not used to sights and sounds. They wiggle out of that harness in 2 seconds and they're gone. So if you have questions about that, please make sure you're talking to your veterinarian or your team there at the hospital, and they can absolutely make sure it's fitted correctly when you're out of your home to make sure that that is fit correctly. The third thing that I'm sort of my soapbox is we see the most lost dogs on dogs that are on flexi leads. Those leashes that have the ability with the button to kind of expand and pull out, and then you can sort of reel them in like a fishing line. That is a very, very hard way to sort of navigate, especially in urban environment, because there is constant change on the streets, constant change in sounds, unpredictability of fire trucks and police and subways and thunder and all kinds of things that will be startling. And especially if you're in a family and you've got a child walking on a flexi leash like that, it doesn't take much to come off that or for that dog, or we have some cats on them too, to run out and that catch doesn't hold and they're out in the street before you know it and having an accident. So it's a little bit more on safety, but also on getting those pets lost. I like traditional leashes better to train your dog on heeling and coming and returns on a flexi lead. So I caution people on those types of leashes. But if your pet is lost, most important thing one is to contact your microchip company and alert them. Number two, alert your veterinary office, alert your county shelters, city shelters, any large rescue groups. Social media is, again, a huge part of this. So having your veterinary practice put that out if they can, but definitely you putting it out and having people share that, getting a current picture of your pet on the social media, and also just putting up traditional posters. I tell people around here to go into dry cleaners and coffee shops and all of the things that tend to be every couple blocks, because that's where people tend to get to know neighbors. And it wouldn't take long for someone to say, oh, I saw your dog running a few blocks up the street. And people are really great about bonding together. And obviously, every pet owner out there has tremendous empathy for a lost pet. And if you can get those onto local, you know, pet chat rooms or any place that, you know, is pet friendly, large condo buildings, all of pet owners out there, we want to make sure we're home with our pets. So we all have empathy and sympathy and certainly will do our best to make sure they're found. But I think the most important thing is being proactive and trying not even to get to that point.
Yeah, listen, what I love is that you mentioned a multimodal approach to helping to find your pet. I mean, it's not because of the volume of pets that are lost every year, it becomes extremely challenging to reunite a lost pet with their family because vets are overloaded, shelters are overloaded, rescue organizations are overloaded. So if you can do your part in terms of checking with your veterinarian, the microchip company, on social media, I think it definitely improves the chances helping reunite your pet. And I agree with you on the flexi lead. I mean, it's really sort of heart-wrenching sometimes to see these flexi leads, because you wonder if an emergency situation developed or if there was an urgent scenario, could that pet parent retract that leash fast enough to keep their pet out of danger? And sadly, that's not always the case. So yeah. You bring up really, really good points. But let's say serendipity strikes. Your pet was lost, returns home, gives you the biggest hug, the biggest kiss on the face. You're so happy. But then about 15 seconds into the hugging and the kissing, you find out that your pet has been skunked multiple times.
Oh.
And now it's like all over you. And now you're so happy that you got reunited with your lost pet. But now you've got a secondary concern. How do I get this skunk smell off of my pet? Now, I mean, when we were growing up, I heard everything from tomato juice to, I mean, a whole bunch of others. Are there any pet hacks that you advise owners on how to remove skunk smell from their pet?
Yes. And I like to do things sort of myself, you know, sort of your, like we've talked about some of these home hacks that you can keep on hand. There is one commercial product though out there that is incredibly effective. And if you're in an area where there are a prevalence of skunks, or your neighbors report, hey, I know you just got a puppy there, you know, my dog's been skunked 3 times. So you know it's something that could happen in your area. I love the product Skunk Off.
So Skunk Off.
Skunk Off. Yeah. So that would be something to keep on hand or just order. So hopefully you'll never have to use it, but you don't want to be searching for that at 2 o'clock in the morning if that's happened to you. It's a very pungent smell and certainly can be really uncomfortable to your pet, especially around the eyes and mouth. If you do find yourself in that situation and you don't have Skunk Off, there is a formula that you can sort of make at home that can be used on different surfaces too. If a skunk has come up to your back door or your patio or your furniture or something, and you find that that odor is lingering, 3 things you'll need to have on hand. You'll need about 1 quart of your standard hydrogen peroxide, about 1/4 cup of baking soda, and 2 teaspoons of liquid dish soap.
Combine those baking all together. Soda, hydrogen peroxide, and dish soap.
Dish soap. You got okay. It. And you combine those all together, and that can be used, again, on surfaces. So I would not be putting that on my pet.
Okay.
But that can be used on your environmental surfaces, again, outside patio furniture or windows or doors or things that have been outside. But Skunk Off is a wonderful, very safe and effective product to have on hand, especially in suburban or rural areas where we do find skunks sort of traipsing through backyards or neighborhoods. And if you have heard from neighbors that this is a common problem, my brother's backyard, unfortunately, in the suburbs here, there's a family of skunks that tends to go through quite a bit. And they have been a repeat offender in this area. And so, again, Skunk Off is a lifesaver and something you don't want to be looking for in the wee hours of the morning.
That's so important.
There she is.
Not
she
a fan of skunks. Definitely not a fan of skunks. I also heard that that's an excellent recipe, by the way. And thank you so much for that. We do know that sometimes this hydrogen peroxide baking soda combination can release oxygen. So I just tell people it's very important. Don't smoke or do anything around this mixture. You definitely don't want any combustible things to happen in that scenario. You have been fantastic, but I have to ask you just one more pet hacks, because I'm literally hanging on every word. And that is something that a question we get very frequently. They ask, my pet has a little bit of diarrhea. What are some good over-the-counter or maybe even home treatments that we can do as a dietary change to help my pet with diarrhea?
Yes. And I think that's probably the number one call or email that I get. And thankfully, many causes of diarrhea are short-lived and self-resolving or even home-resolving without any interference or intervention at the veterinary practice. So I think there's a lot of strategies you can try at home. The first, and I do tend to get some kind of turned heads and question marks when I say this because it sounds a little different, but the first is really to fast your dog or cat for one meal. Now, I know you're going to be getting those sad eyes, and it's very hard for pet parents to take away food a lot of times because we do use food to show love. However, in this case, we want to slow down the GI tract. And if there's been a dietary indiscretion or something that your dog or cat has gotten into that's just not sitting well, we want to limit food for the next 12 hours and let everything rest and start to sort of naturally do what it needs to do, which is firm up. So water is fine, but limit the food. The next meal should be a bland diet. And there's some things you can add that are natural ways to help firm up stool or help with any other sources of diarrhea. Just like my peanut butter and my rubbing alcohol and skunk off things to have on hand, I would always have canned pumpkin on hand. It's great to stock up right after Thanksgiving when everything goes on sale. Have a bunch of canned pumpkin in your house, all for dogs and cats. But it's a natural fiber source that will help resolve a lot of cases of colitis, which is inflammation of the colon. We tend to get that from any kind of stressor. So that could be a dietary indiscretion. That could be your dog was in a boarding facility, you had a huge dinner party, and your dog doesn't like all that stress and stimulation. They're scared of thunderstorms, and it was a rough night in the spring. Lots of different reasons dogs can get stress colitis. Canned pumpkin a lot of times will help resolve that. So I tend to say about a tablespoon per 20 pounds is kind of a rough guess for most pets.
A tablespoon per 20 pounds is your rough estimate.
Yep. And sometimes we need a little more or a little less. It's always important to remember canned pumpkin will turn your pet's stool a little orange. That means nothing. It's totally normal. Don't worry about that if the next stool or two is a little bit different color, but that's just the pumpkin doing its job.
Orange poop, don't panic.
Don't panic. Okay. Yeah. Just like with kids, the only time we panic with stools, I say panic loosely, the only time we get concerned is when it's white, red, or black. Between that, I don't get too worried about because pigments can change. But very similar to canned pumpkin, you can also use Metamucil, bananas. You can use any of brand products, but I think canned pumpkin works the best.
Well, that's perfect.
Dogs seem to like it.
They do. Yep, they do. It's very palatable. And a lot of pets, especially those that have repeat colitis. So if you have a dog that's anxious and you travel a lot for work and you have to board your dog a lot, canned pumpkin is a great maintenance food to add to your diet, to your dog's diet. And it may help prevent in some cases. But if you are not seeing improvement with your dog or cat with diarrhea, especially after 48 hours, or if your dog or cat is showing poop that is in that worry color, white, red, or black, or if your dog or cat is not eating or having vomiting or other clinical signs, then absolutely talk to your veterinarian. You may need to bring your pet in for an exam because it may not be one of those home remedy resolving cases of diarrhea.
You know, I got to be honest with you. These are so vitally important pet hacks, and some of them are absolutely ingenious. All of them are ingenious, to be honest with you. But besides just being cool and kind of crafty, what I love about them is almost all of them either prevent sickness or help your pet during sickness. And a lot of them could even be lifesavers. So for me, these are so salient and relevant. And I just appreciate so much of your time today, because the truth is, I feel like, Dr. Marks, we could keep going. I mean, we could go on to 100 of them. Isn't that the case?
I think we could. Like you said, it's today's world is so busy. And we want our pet owners to really enjoy having a pet at home. And we don't want the stress and anxiety and worry of illness or behavior problems to wedge in between that human-animal bond. So if we can be efficient and sometimes cost-effective, as well as taking the best care of our pet, you know, starting at home first, I think that's the best way to have a great relationship.
Well, perfect. You know what this means, right, Dr. Mars? This means that I got to have you back for Pet Hacks Part 2. Would you ever come back?
Oh, I'd love to. Let me know.
Excellent. Thank you so much. This is perfect. Listen, until next time, Dr. Mars, let's touch base again, because I know that people are craving more and more information. And when you come back, I will have to talk about how to get you out of Chicago so you can come to California.
I'll take you up on that.
All right. Perfect. Thanks again for joining me, and we'll talk next time.
Sounds great. Thanks again.
Perfect. Wow, folks. Look at that. That was incredible. Dr. Natalie just dropped bombs on us after bomb after bomb. Just really, really great, ingenious pet hacks. And listen, I mean, some of these you think are a little bit whimsical or light, but they're truthful. I mean, a pet that overheats, I've seen, unfortunately, some pets not make it through those episodes. Pets that get cold, it's uncomfortable. Or just seeing the heartbreaking look on somebody's face when they lose a pet. So she mentioned microchipping and having a properly fitting collar and leash and just checking with your rescues and social media on how to reunite your pet with your family. We got a chance to talk about how important early training is, pet insurance, and peanut butter. I mean, we give two thumbs up to peanut butter, xylitol free. And of course, vaccines. Vaccines help prevent infectious disease, and infectious disease is literally everywhere. And of course, medications. Hopefully your pet at some point, you know, hopefully your pet will never need medications. But the truth is, all pets are living, breathing, wonderful beings and are going to need medications at some point. So I'm glad we got to cover that too. But there's just so much information packed full. I'm going to review all this again because it's wonderful. And of course, I have my own too. So whatever, I think the key is whatever you have found to be effective for your pet, because you know them better than anybody else, don't be afraid to use your own personal pet hack. All right? Excellent. Wonderful podcast. Please join me for the next one. We've got even more amazing guests lined up. And until next time, never forget, there's nothing stronger than the human-animal bond.
Let's Talk Pets every week on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com.